Now, Adam Jowett's got a book called No Way Out, and in Helmand Province in July 2006, Major Adam Jowett was given command of Easy Company, a rather hastily assembled and, it could be said, under-strength unit of Paras and Royal Irish Rangers. Their mission was to hold the district centre of Musa Qala at any cost. What happened next is extraordinary, and it's all detailed in the book, and I'm delighted to welcome the man himself, Major Adam Jowett, to the show. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill.
Thank you for joining us. So this posting for you came, I think, about 15 years into your career. Was it a surprise posting? What were you expecting?
To be honest, I was already a company commander in 3 para, but I was pretty much tied to the operations room. So responsible for planning operations as part of the battle group's staff.
Right.
And if I'm honest, the chance to be out on the ground deployed with a company was one I really looked forward to.
Mm. And you were sent to this place, Musa Qala, and I think the Danish government had pulled its troops out of that area, and so you were kind of put there to do their job, I guess.
Bill, you're absolutely right. The Danish squadron, they were a reconnaissance squadron, and like the Pathfinders before them,
yep.
They were in this big town, and essentially they were unable to project out, they were unable to influence anyone, because the only people in Musa Qala at that time were the enemy. So they were stuck, and you're absolutely right, it was a political decision to get them out, get them on another mission, but it did leave us scratching, and in fact, I'm going to use the commanding officer's expression, scraping the barrel to fill that gap. So, real sense of adventure for us.
I mean, it's interesting that you call it a sense of adventure, but it must have been also scary that it was put together hastily, and you were, as you just said yourself, scraping the barrel there, but you're going in dealing with people's lives at the end of the day.
Absolutely. For us, though, bearing in mind all the rangers, all the paras and the signalers, we're all part of the air assault brigade. We're all in theatre in Afghanistan doing jobs of some description. And actually, the fact that there was a real sense that it was a mission that no one wanted.
Right.
So it gave it this sort of desperate feel to it, and we got stuck in.
So tell us about Musa Qala and why it was so important and what it was like on the ground there when you were sent there.
So Musa Qala is the district centre. So it was a large town, and it was the focal point in quite a big area up in northern Helmand of government influence. And the district centre is really, it's an equivalent of UK council offices. So, and in addition to that, they had a jail. But it was the government's flag, if you like, in a sea of Taliban flags. And that's why it was important for the governor to not lose it. Because without the Pathfinders and the Danes and then us, it would have been Taliban, Taliban held in a couple of hours.
Right, and it was later described by General Sir David Richards as a persistent, low-level, dirty fighting of a duration not experienced since Korea or World War II.
Yes, it was.
Amazing.
On the ground, at the tactical level, the fighting was very close. It was grenade range distance, small arms, rifles, pistols, with lots of modern weaponry, and I've got to say the aerial support was our lifeline. But the basic day-to-day grind of combat was ancient. And we were, we had dummy positions. We painted sticks so that they looked like machine guns, so
wow.
that they would draw fire. It was infantry doing what infantry does.
Depending on which version of this you look at, and there's obviously been a lot of tales about it. In fact, there was even a documentary on Channel 4 about it. Some describe it that you were abandoned in hell by senior officers, but I get the impression that was kind of part of the attraction for you.
And there's been quite rightly, a lot of debate about why we were in that position. The strategy that we had in early 2006 did not see us out in these remote platoon houses in places like Masakala and Nowzad and Sangin. But the fact that we ended up there was very much a result of the enemy, the Taliban, looking to press the advantage before we deployed. So great strategy, but it just simply couldn't be followed through.
I guess there are several questions that come out of this for people who are reading the book and have heard the story. Why, firstly, were you fighting for your lives in a dusty, hard to defend outpost? What people or ideals were you meant to be actually defending? And was anything really lost after you'd retreated?
Really good points, and I'll start with the ideals that we're protecting. And basically, as international troops supporting the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, we were there to enable all the really laudable development and progress across all society, judiciary, rule of law, through to education and farming, and all those good aims were what we were trying to set the conditions for. What wasn't appreciated was the level of violence that the Taliban would offer.
Right.
Their determination to resist.
Understood. I hear time and time again, and I've interviewed other people who have had not dissimilar stories, and it does come up time and time again that people are placed into danger while fighting for the armed forces from the United Kingdom and are either undermanned or under-resourced. It seems like you were both, or is that not fair?
No, it is a very fair point. But to be honest, I don't think there's a commander in war who's ever felt that they had everything they wanted.
Right.
And everything they needed. But yes, I mean, we were very stretched. We were a two-platoon rifle company, lacking in, you know, a lot of kit, a lot of ammunition. But it was like that in 2006.
So tell us on the ground what happened and how it transpired that you eventually left. What about casualties involved there from the British point of view?
We lost 12 men to battlefield casualties who had to be extracted, and three of the company, two Irish Rangers and one signaller, were killed in action. And the real crunch point was the fact that we just couldn't secure a helicopter landing site. We could barely man the walls, and each time someone was wounded, the helicopter was being shot up. And the penultimate extraction, the helicopter was taking heavy, heavy effective enemy fire and could not land.
Right.
So that was the dilemma. And to be honest, the only factor that kept us going was the camaraderie, the fact that we were thick as thieves and fighting for each other.
And the eventual withdrawal, what was the kind of linchpin that made it obvious to you that you had to get out of there effectively?
Well, a totally unexpected development came through the tribal elders. So these are the village chiefs, if you like, who in Masakala would be responsible for local governments, so almost parallel to what the government would do. But they had the power and the influence to bring the Taliban to the front gate, and I was told to go out and negotiate.
Wow. And
it was because they were suffering, and they were... So whilst we were stuck in the middle of town, surrounded by the enemy, in a bigger circle around them, we had household cavalry and all sorts of maneuver groups interdicting, stopping them from getting into town, stopping them resupplying.
Mm.
So So it was like a sort of grind to a point where they couldn't continue. We were on our final scales of ammunition. So, you know, what you had in your pistol magazines or your rifle magazines, that was it. And something had to give. So it was agreed at a high level, government, Afghan government level, NATO, and all the way down to company, go and make this work.
There can't have been many people, Adam, who were in your position of negotiating what was basically a truce temporarily with the Taliban.
No, and to be honest, it's a point that we've all struggled with since, because it's not what we wanted to do. It's not what any soldier wants to do. And I, personally have experience of seeing other people in Sierra Leone mostly negotiating with the rebels and it not working, them either being killed or captured.
Yes. And the way that you were removed left you even more vulnerable, didn't it, in a way?
The actual extraction, again, it was such a long way from a military extraction that, we didn't want it. We didn't suggest it.
Mm.
It was just another constraint that we had to crack on with and make work.
You're effectively extracted in unprotected goods trucks. As you were sitting on those good trucks, it must have crossed your mind more than once. Or what about if they break this deal and they just ambush us?
Absolutely. And that was one of the big risks. But in the month of negotiations, I got to the point where the Taliban, I had to appreciate that the Taliban could have gone back on their word at any moment. So when we were in town buying bread and I'd see the Taliban lieutenant who I'd started the negotiation with, or any of the men that we'd been fighting for weeks beforehand, either side could have broken the ceasefire then. And the fact that neither us, as in the Easy Company, or the Taliban were happy about this ceasefire, in a way it didn't matter. It was a chance. It was the only hope that Musa Qala as a town and its big population had of getting back to normal. So again, it was just another friction, another constraint that you have to manage.
Well, the book is an incredible tale. For those who didn't see the actual Channel 4 documentary, which it was criticised by many people, that documentary, for various reasons, but the book tells the story from the man who was there, Major Adam Jowett. It's called No Way Out. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it, and I'd love to talk again at some point in the future. Thank you.
Bill, absolutely wonderful, and thanks for calling me on to RTE.
Not a problem at all. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye now.